Greetings, everyone. This is the Sound Health Options Show with Richard Talk To Me Guy and Sherry Edwards. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Richard. Sorry.
Good morning.
Most people know that we've been struck by lightning here in this building, and our phones and computers all got whacked, so I sound a little different to most people today, and I'm going to try to keep my phone on mute because there's still some crackling going on. So that's my apology to our wonderful audience. We have a special guest today. Oh, all of our guests are special, but this one comes out of you guys asking us to find somebody that could talk about feeling fat and fatigued and unhealthy. So our guest, Dr. Stephen Gundry, is going to solve all those problems for us. He has a new book he'll be talking about, Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution. He says our genes are messing us up, and we're going to find out what that's about. First, we need to let you know that we are being sponsored by the Institute of Bioacoustic Biology and Sound Health over here in Ohio. And Richard is in California with Blog Talk Radio, so you'll be able to listen to the show shortly after this. And I think that a lot of you are going to want to send out the link to your friends and family and Facebook and Twitter and all those other things, because this is a very special show. Here at the Institute, we stick a microphone in front of your face. We ask for 30 seconds of your vocal profile, and we've been able to prove that people with similar issues, fatigue or lipidemia or heart disease, they all have similar vocal anomalies. So we take a computer and analyze your voice, and we find out what's happening right now and what's happening in predictive. And I mention this because we think this brings good information to our clients, because we do research projects, and the one that we're doing right now is about lipidemia. Now, that's spelled and pronounced differently. Lipodemia, lipodemia. People are clamoring to be the first to officially, this is the word that we're going to work with. So if you look at this online, and we've talked about this two or three times on the show, and we had somebody last Sunday about the lipidemia, we are going to offer to all of the audience a free vocal analysis. Just go to soundhealthportal.com. That's our online workstation for people doing sound work. And it's free for those of you who want to go in and get a lipidemia evaluation, because we need more data. We only have about 50 people in the data so far. But what we found of this incurable disease is that adiponectin is not being used right, which is a hormone. And there are vascular transporters that are not being utilized efficiently. So we want to add to the database. So if you would go in and give us your data, if you are a person that has large legs and butt, something like Kim Kardashian, how her top is and her shoulders are kind of small, but her bottom is large. And when you go online and look at some of these photos, it'll break your heart. And if we can help decode this, like we've done with other things, with fibromyalgia and gout and some other incurable things, it would make us very happy. So that's my one announcement, Richard, about what I hope for the world and one of the reasons we bring this show on air.
And first, I want to make a correction, Sherry. The Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution was his first book, and his new book, The Plant Paradox, The Hidden Dangers in Healthy Food That Cause Disease and Weight Gain, is the book that he's talking, that is his brand new book with updated information that's just filled. I've actually read the book. It's quite a, you know, it's an amazing gathering of information, and it's, I will say that it's quite revolutionary, because it really clarifies, you know, and makes us able to eat well and be healthy. A shocking concept.
when I received his file, this is the one that was in it. So this is a fascinating one, too. I look forward to hearing about the next one.
This is great. And I want to let people know, because there is going to be information in here that I know you're going to want to pass on to friends and or listen to again. And to do that, the easiest thing to do, the show will be available about 10 to 15 minutes after we end the show. And you can go to soundhealthoptions.com, click on the radio tab, and then click on the Blog Talk Radio Archives. And the last five shows that we've done will be in that player. And you'll be able to find this show there. And also you could go to their iTunes or whatever podcast aggregator app. I happen to like Stitcher quite a bit because it's easy to, it's free, there's that. It's cross-platform, so I can use it on my computer or any on my devices. And it's easy to pass shows that you like to friends. You can just email them the show and they'll get to listen to it. And this is going to be one of those shows when you hear what Dr. Gundry's talking about, it's really going to go like, what? Wow. That it's amazing. It's really, really great. And then I have one one other announcement, and then I want to dive right in. This is just amazing. Neil deGrasse Tyson fans deserve more than Twisted Tale on GMOs. So Neil deGrasse Tyson narrated a film talking about GMOs. I don't know yet because I haven't been able to do enough research to figure out if he knew going in or not that what the intention of the film was to manipulate the information. They interviewed people like Michael Pollan, who's anti-GMO and very articulate about why he's anti-GMO. And yet when they interviewed all these people, they didn't tell them that really the spin of the film was pro-GMO, saying how GMO is good and it's going to save the world and, you know, usual BS. And it's just, you know, and there are a bunch of people who have, since the film has got out, which I think is called The Food Evolution. Now, this article is a little unclear about that, but it shows a bunch of tweets by people that are involved in the film who are saying, no, no, they took what I was saying out of context, that I was not saying, you know, that GMOs are good and they're going to save the planet. And it's just, A, disgusting, gross, toxic, you know, it's just an amazing thing how they would gather. I mean, they're, as I said, you know, Michael Pollan's big in the world of environmental issues. So to be able to, I can't use any of those words. You know, it just appalls me that this would happen in this day and age that, you know, this is like, sure, let's get all these people together and create a lie. Really? It's just, it's appalling. Okay, that's my announcement. And I feel that that is a good lead-in because I know that Dr. Gundry has some attitude about GMOs. For over 30 years, Dr. Stephen Gundry has been the world's preeminent expert in heart surgery. His experiences took him to new frontiers of medical science. Dr. Gundry was the driving force behind major breakthroughs in medical technology and surgical procedures, breakthroughs that revolutionized the way doctors saved lives. Then, Dr. Gundry realized that the key to strong, sustainable, healthy lives in all of us in the form of beneficial microbes. These good bacteria are in danger of dying out due to dietary and environmental issues that overload our systems with threatening bad microbes. Once you begin taking care of good microbes, or as Stephen likes to call them, your gut buddies, you can begin an incredible transformation. Dr. Gundry founded GundryMD.com with one mission: to dramatically improve human health, happiness, and longevity through his unique vision of diet and nutrition. Dr. Gundry joins us to talk about his new book, The Plant Paradox, The Hidden Dangers in Healthy Food That Cause Disease and Weight Gain. Good morning, Dr. Gundry.
Well, thanks for having me on.
It really is. As I said, we were talking briefly backstage before we started, and I was saying I had found this article not intentionally, but it just appeared, and I thought it fit right in because I knew you do have some. We'll get to those attitudes about GMOs, but I want to ask you right out. I want to get ask you right out of the gate. So you were incredibly successful heart surgeon. You invented instruments for the field. And then something happened. And what was the aha moment that made you being an extremely successful heart surgeon and move to helping your patients with diet?
Well, actually, in my first book, Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution, that was a direct result of the day my life arc changed when I met a guy from Miami, Florida, by the name of Big Ed in the book. Big Ed was 48 years old and had inoperable coronary artery disease. The blood vessels in his heart were so clogged up that you couldn't put stents in them. You couldn't do bypasses because there wasn't any place to jump to. And like so many others, Big Ed had gone around the country to various centers to look for surgeons or cardiologists who are famous for taking on, inoperable cases. And he'd been doing this for about 6 months. And everywhere he went, Cleveland Clinic, Mayo Clinic, Texas Heart, Stanford, they all turned him down. And as part of these quests, people would eventually wind up with me at Loma Linda University in Southern California. And I looked at the angiogram, the movie of Big Ed's heart, and I said, Big Ed, I got to agree with everybody else. I'm not going to do you any good for the reasons I just mentioned. And he said, well, look, here's the deal. I've been doing this for 6 months now, and I've been on a diet for 6 months, and I've lost 45 pounds. Now, this was a guy who was 265 pounds when I was looking at him. So that's a big guy. And he said, and I went to a health food store, and I had been taking all these supplements. And he literally brought in a shopping bag full of supplements. And he says, maybe I did something in my heart. So I'm sitting there scratching my professor beard and going, well, good for you, Big Ed, for losing weight, but that's not going to do anything to your blood vessels. And I know what you did with all those supplements. You made expensive urine. I actually believed that back then. And so he actually was a determined fellow, and he said, oh, come on, I've come all the way from Miami. What would it hurt to get another angiogram, another movie of my heart? Mm-hmm. So I said, okay. So we got another angiogram, and lo and behold, in 6 months' time, Big Ed had cleaned out 50% of the blockages in his heart. And at that time, I was so excited because now there were actually places you could do bypasses. Then I, the next day, did a five-vessel bypass on him. Now, if I knew what I knew now, that would be the last thing I'd do, but I didn't know that then. So after we're done, I said, now, tell me about this diet. And he said, well, here's what I did. And about two sentences into the diet, I said, wait a minute, time out. What you're describing is my research thesis as an undergraduate at Yale University. I had a thesis that you could take a great ape, manipulate its food supply, manipulate its environment, and predict that a human being would be the result. And I defended my thesis and got an honors. And then I tucked my thesis away in my parents' home and went on to be a very famous heart surgeon. And why this was so interesting to me was that even though I was a big fat guy at this time. I was running 30 miles a week. I was going to the gym 1 hour a day. I was eating a healthy, low-fat vegetarian diet at Loma Linda. And I had high blood pressure, high cholesterol, prediabetes, arthritis. I used to do baby heart transplants with migraine headaches. And I was told it was normal because my father was the same way. And it was genetic. And so after I talked to Big Ed, I called my parents and I said, do you still have my thesis? And they said, oh, yeah, it's here in the shrine next to the eternal flame. And I said, well, send it up to me. And so they did. And the other thing I did with Big Ed, I said, let me look at this bag of supplements. And I start going through there. And I'm very famous for keeping hearts alive for 48 hours in a bucket of ice water. And I'm actually famous for taking a dead heart, a heart that's been dead for an hour, and then resuscitating it and making it work again and putting into somebody else, and it works just fine. And I was using a number of supplements down the veins and arteries of the heart to do this. And looking through Big Ed's bag of supplements, there were a lot of supplements that I was using in the lab. Now, it never occurred to me to swallow these things. So, yeah, long story short, I put myself on my thesis and started taking a lot of supplements. And I lost 50 pounds my first year, and I subsequently have lost another 20 pounds, and I've kept it off for 15 years. And I started doing blood work on myself and then the patients that I would operate on, and we started seeing fascinating changes at the inflammatory cytokine level and at the blood vessel level. And after about a year of this at Loma Linda, my wife still calls it Black Friday, I looked in the mirror and I said, you know, I know how to teach people how to reverse whatever disease they have with food, and sending them to the health food store and pick up some supplements. And I really shouldn't slice people open anymore. So I resigned my position. Yeah, I resigned my position. And I came out to Palm Springs, which is really next door to Loma Linda, and set up an institute. And basically all I ask of people is, if you want to play with me, every 3 months I want to take about 10 to 12 tubes of blood out of you, and I want to send it around the country to various labs, and I want to see what, you know, asking you to eat certain foods or asking you to take certain supplements will do. And it's all, you know, insurance-based. I, believe it or not, to this day still take Medicaid and Medi-Cal and Medicare. And, and so as we did this, these patterns emerged, and that resulted in my first book, Dr. Gundry's Diet Evolution, and which was a big hit. And then after that book came out, the hardcover came out in 2008, a lot of people with autoimmune diseases started showing up in my doorstep. And they'd say, well, what do you know about autoimmune disease? And I said, well, I don't know anything about autoimmune disease, but I know a whole lot about the immune system because, among other things, I'm famous as a transplant immunologist. And that basically means I like to know how to fool the immune system so that I could put a pig heart in a baboon, for instance, and have it live. Which is actually really hard to do. So I actually hold the world record for a month of beating in a pig. So I know how the immune system, what the immune system is looking for and how it works. So I said, what the heck? You know, let's see what the immune system is interested in you. And that work, among other things, resulted in the new book, which is called The Plant Paradox. And we've come a long way in our knowledge of how the immune system works. And one of the things that's been most fascinating to me is how plants defend themselves. And so maybe we can take a breath, and then if you want to, we'll talk about plants and how they try to get rid of their predator, who happens to be us, among other things.
Right. Nature is so clever. I want to ask you that question, and then I have a follow-up question after you talk about your great chapter, The War Between Plants and Animals, and we are one of those animals.
Yep.
It's not like the plants are like, oh, no, we like them. No, plants are out to get us. And or yep. Certain plant. Please talk about that.
So this is, you know, it's actually, once you kind of think about it, it actually makes sense. But we're fairly naive. plants were here first. There's no disagreement about that. Even my evangelical Christians will give me the fact that plants were here for 48 hours before we arrived. But plants, when they had it really great before animals were around because nobody wanted to eat them. And believe it or not, plants do not want to be eaten. They have life, just like we do, and they're subject to evolutionary pressures, just like animals. And they absolutely don't want their babies eaten, their seeds. Now, the problem for plants when animals arrived, and the first animals were insects, plants couldn't run, they couldn't hide, and they couldn't fight. But plants are chemists of incredible ability. They can turn sunlight into matter, and we still haven't figured out how to do that. So what they do is actually chemical or biological warfare to try to thwart their predators. And they're actually incredibly good at this. The idea is that they use compounds, and one of the ones that I really hone on to in the book are called lectins, L-E-C-T-I-N-S, that are proteins. These proteins are sometimes called sticky proteins. We've known about them since 1880. Interestingly enough, when we do blood typing, we actually use plant lectins to decide what blood type you are, because these will actually stick to the surface of blood cells, depending on which sugar molecule that is on your red blood cells that they want to stick to. So these proteins are sticky proteins, and they go after sugar molecules, specific sugar molecules. And the basic idea is they hack the computer system of their predator in a lot of different ways. The idea is to make the predator ill or not thrive or hurt, or in the case of insect, believe it or not, to paralyze the insect by paralyzing the nerves of the insect. And a smart predator will very rapidly say, you know, every time I'm eating these plants or these plant babies, I'm not moving so good, I hurt, my brain doesn't work well, I'm not thriving, I'm not reproducing well, and I'm going to go start eating something else. The plant wins, the animal wins, and everybody's happy. And then humans arrive. Humans, unfortunately, are really stupid, as most of us know. And so when we eat things that make us feel lousy or not thrive or hurt, we take, Aleve or Advil or antidepressants or antacids or Nexium or Prilosec, OTC, or antibiotics, and we keep eating these things. And the plant basically goes, gee whiz, you know, what do I have to do to get your attention? And I'm convinced that if we'd only pay a little bit of attention, we'd be much better off. So the book is actually how to tell you who your plant friends are and who your plant enemies are. And the other part of the book, as you've read, is that there have been essentially seven deadly disruptors that have been introduced in the last 50 years that have really kind of upset the balance of power between plants and animals, and we can get into that as we go along.
I want to jump back for a moment. I do want to talk about those seven deadly disruptors. I want to jump back for a moment. When you work with patients, because this was really such a powerful aha for me, that you are actually monitoring their inflammatory markers, you put them on a lectin low or lectin free diet, and then you monitor their biomarkers again. You see those inflammatory markers go down. I'm not sure that's the right language, but they go down. Yes. And if they fall off, they go back up. I mean, you were actually
that's
just
correct.
Like watching the body react and going, oh, no lectins. lack of inflammation. Oh, lectins, inflammation. Am I stating it too simply?
No, that's exactly right. You can. It's fascinating. Through the years, I've one of the things, because I've been a researcher, an academic researcher all my life, when I decided to do this, I didn't know any better, so I made every patient my research project. And you can quantify inflammatory markers, and you can take away a food or give a supplement, and then you can see what happens to those inflammatory markers. And just like you said, about 10 years ago, I noticed, Sherry mentioned adiponectin. Well, I happened to notice that my patients with autoimmune diseases and with irritable bowel, IBS, all had elevated adiponectin levels. And we're taught in traditional medicine that adiponectin is a good hormone. It makes you lose weight, it prevents diabetes. Yet adiponectin is elevated in people with rheumatoid arthritis. The Women's Health Study showed that women who had elevated levels of adiponectin had a very high rate of dementia, which didn't make sense because these women were skinny. So a few years ago, I gave a paper at the American Heart Association showing that if you had an elevated adiponectin level, you were more than likely sensitive to lectins, and you would have a marker, an inflammatory cytokine called TNF-alpha, tumor necrosis factor alpha, that would be elevated. Mm-hmm. And I proved in 800 people that if you took the major lectins away from people, that the TNF-alpha level would fall to normal, but that the adiponectin level would stay elevated. So I proposed that an elevated adiponectin level was a pretty good marker that you're sensitive to lectins. And clearly, some people are far more sensitive to lectins than others. And in the book, I call them my canaries, like a canary in a coal mine. Coal miners can't smell the poisonous gases, but canaries have a very high metabolic rate, so coal miners would carry canaries into the mines. And if the canary stopped singing and flitting around, you ran. And through the years, I've been blessed to meet a large number of canaries. In fact, I just met a canary in my office yesterday, which he's a good example. But these people react to lectins almost instantaneously with, for instance, a migraine or with asthma or with joint pain or with brain fog. And it's fascinating getting lectins away from these people. It's fairly instantaneous. And we can see, really, with anyone, that, like you mentioned, all their inflammation markers go away. But then either if they inadvertently start eating lectins or purposely start eating them because they're all better and they're cured, we can see that the inflammation markers really, within days, start going back up again. So, and the nice thing, I guess, about my work is that this isn't just saying, placebo effect, I tried this diet and I feel so much better and it's wonderful. This is actually documented. In fact, just this week, I flew back from giving a paper about lectins and polyphenols at the 11th Annual World Congress of Targeting Polyphenols in Vienna, Austria, and basically showed that you could look at the markers of inflammation on the inside of blood vessels and take lectins away from people, and the markers of inflammation on blood vessels would go to normal. And then you could reintroduce lectins, and lo and behold, the markers of inflammation would reappear. So this is, you know, this is good science. It's not conjecture. And I think that's one of the interesting things about this book, is because I'm not making claims that I can't substantiate with thousands of people giving blood tests every 3 months.
Well, and that's one of the things, that's why I was so excited by that. Well, the whole book is good. And for me, that part was really so exciting because you talk to a lot of people or you read like the, you know, thing and the magic new and this and that. And but I mean, here's an actual, like, as you, you know, you measure the inflammatory marker, you take them off the food, you take them off lectins. I mean, actual observable results, and your blood can't lie.
Right.
It's, you know, that's such a positive, powerful documentation to go like, it's gone, you're better. It's back, you're not as good. Oh, you know, it's not like we, like you said, as, you know, a caveman, some caveman had to go out there and eat that poisonous bush once. Oh, Bob died. That's a result. That's bad. Don't eat that.
That's right.
You know, that's a hard way. This is much better.
Yeah, there's a joke in the anti-lectin community that, for instance, a jalapeno pepper, one of the reasons that peppers are full of lectins. And the joke is that no animal would ever take a second bite out of a jalapeno pepper, except one. And that would be a stupid human.
go ahead.
The plant's going, just how stupid are you? I mean, I'm trying to point out that you really shouldn't eat this. So
Can I eat my jalapeno peppers? I'm one of those stupid humans. Can I eat them if I roast them and remove the skin and take the seeds out? Is the flesh okay,
yes,
or is it? Okay,
yeah,
great.
The flesh
you.
Is actually, right. The flesh is safe. And in fact, it's funny, I was in Italy the previous week studying the world's oldest people, and one of the things the Italians have done since peppers and tomatoes arrived in Italy, Columbus brought them back 500 years ago, and the Italians actually refused to eat peppers and tomatoes for 200 years because they knew how lethal they were, but they figured out, probably again through trial and error, that the peels and the seeds have the lectins. So they always peel and de-seed their tomatoes before they make sauce. And they always roast and peel and de-seed their peppers. In fact, you go to the grocery store this afternoon and buy a glass jar of Italian bell peppers, and you'll notice that there's no peels and seeds because they're gone, because that's where the lectins are. Interestingly, you know, peppers, the nightshades, are American plants. And the Southwest American Indians, who have chilies, you know, they actually always roast and peel and de-seed their chilies before they grind it into chili powder before they eat them. And you can prove this to yourself at your grocery store by buying a can of chopped green chilies, and you'll notice there's no peels and seeds because traditional cultures have figured out how to kind of de-lectin these foods. Also, traditionally, we ferment peppers. Tabasco sauce, for instance, is fermented peppers. And with fermentation, we actually allow bacteria and mold and fungi to do the work of digesting lectins, and they do a pretty good job of it. So, it's fascinating to watch what traditional cultures have done.
How smart we were before we even had science. It's amazing.
Exactly.
I have a question from the audience, a side question, but it fits in here. One of our regulars is saying that they heard you on a recent show say that A1 dairy, Holstein, is a cause of diabetes and arteriosclerosis, and A2 dairy, Guernsey, is preferred. They're asking, how does goat milk compare to that?
Goats and sheep and water buffalo and Guernsey cows and Swiss brown cows make a protein called casein A2. If you're out in California or Colorado, there's now A2 milk available in some stores. It's a fascinating story. 2,000 years ago, northern European cows suffered a spontaneous genetic mutation, and they started to make a protein in their milk called casein A1. And casein A1 is a lectin-like compound that in our digestive system is changed into what's called beta-caseomorphine, and it is shown to attach to the beta cell of the pancreas and causes an immune attack on the pancreas. I and others think that a great deal of type 1 diabetes, juvenile diabetes, is caused by casein A1 milk, and I and others think that casein A1 milk is certainly implicated in insulin resistance because of this blocking of the insulin-producing cells. But so goats don't have it, sheep don't have it, Guernsey cows, Swiss brown cows don't have it. There's actually a Belgian blue that doesn't have it. But Holsteins are hardier, and they give more milk, and they're A1s. So unfortunately, almost all the cows in the world, including ours, are the wrong breed of cow. So I ask my readers to, if you're going to use cow milk products, to get them from Italy, Switzerland, France. These all are A2 cows, or use goat milk products, sheep milk products, or buffalo mozzarella products.
You made me happy. Buffalo mozzarella,
In fact, it's interesting. I've found through the years that most people who think they have lactose intolerance, or that milk gives them mucus, or their milk upsets their stomach, it's not lactose, it's not milk, it's casein A1. And in fact, in our discussion groups recently, we were talking about this, and several people had gone over to Italy and then had the gelato and had absolutely no ill effect from having gelato. And they basically thought they were cured of their milk intolerance. And they came back and had some American ice cream, and they immediately had the mucus reaction and the IBS. And it's because the milk is not the same milk. It's casein A2 over there, and it's casein A1 over here.
Mm. I have another audience question. What is lectin? We're talking about it a lot, but what is lectin actually? What is the thing?
Yeah. So it's a protein, and it's a protein that, believe it or not, we use lectins. We make lectins. Lectins are how cells, among other things, communicate to each other. Lectins dock onto receptors on the surface of cells, and they convey information. And plants, like I say, have had 400 million years to play with lectins as a method of screwing up their predators. So lectins, give you an example, in insects, lectins are designed by plants to attach to sugar molecules between the endings of nerves. The sugar molecule is called sialic acid, and it prevents one nerve from giving its information to the next nerve. Now, if you think about it, that would paralyze an insect, and that would be a very good defense mechanism, because if the insect can't move, you can't go eat the plant. So this is an example of how lectins work, and one of the things I try to convince anybody with neuropathy or with brain fog is that you're just a giant insect to a plant. And, in fact, there's some really scary stuff that will be in the next book, and I mention it in this book. You can prove that lectins in humans climb the vagus nerve from the gut up to the brain, and go directly to the motion control centers in the brain and cause Parkinson's disease. And there's some amazing human, not experiments, but observations that when I was early in my surgical career, we become general surgeons before we become heart surgeons, and the way to treat ulcers back in the dark ages was to cut the vagus nerve that we thought the brain controlled the stomach, and these people, you cure ulcers. Well, there's been a huge number of people who've had vagotomies, have had their vagus nerve cut. And if you follow people who've had vagotomies, interestingly enough, they don't have very much Parkinson's disease. And isn't that odd? So they've done a beautiful controlled trial where they took age-matched people, some who had vagotomies and some who didn't. And lo and behold, people who had vagotomies had 50% less incidence of Parkinson's. And it's like, you know, it's like
wow.
Plants are climbing our nerves, you know, lectins up to the brain to paralyze us so that we won't eat them. I mean, it's really pretty. We think we're pretty cool animals. And
wow.
Yet plants have had this figured out for so long.
It's amazing. And you talk about, you use a great phrase about how we are in relationship to plants and what we think, that really we kind of have a speed dating concept of, oh yeah, I can eat that now. Talk about that. It was a great phrase. And it's like, no, really, look at this. Plants have been doing this a really long time. And we're like, oh, we're fine now. Really?
Yeah.
Speed dating.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, one of the things that's interesting is that our immune system is designed to basically act like a border patrol or a passport control, and they are designed to look at every protein that you swallow and decide whether, number one, they know this protein, that it looks familiar, that it's not on the no-fly zone list, and then if a protein looks foreign, the immune system says, this is a dangerous guy. We don't recognize it. It might be a bacteria. It might be a virus. And number one, we shouldn't let it in. But if it gets in, we should tell all of our police forces and armed forces that if we ever see this guy lurking, we ought to shoot to kill and we'll ask questions later. So we have within us, within our gut, trillions and trillions of what I call guest workers, who are our bacteria, our gut buddies. And among other things that we've learned now is that the bacteria are actually our kind of first line of defense against lectins. And not only do they eat lectins, believe it or not, there are bacteria that eat gluten. And gluten happens to be a lectin. But bacteria also tell our immune system how things are going in the outside world and whether we should be worried about these lectins or whether, we've known these guys for, 40 million years and, they're a pain in the neck, but, we don't have to get all excited about it. So the longer that we have been eating a particular lectin, the more our bugs have evolved to eat them, and the more our bugs have told our immune system, hey, it's okay, these guys, don't get all upset. So we come from a long line of tree-dwelling creatures. We're actually a tree shrew, which my wife likes to remind me of constantly. and we've been eating leaves for 40 million years. And we react and understand the leaves lectin actually quite well. Now, fast forward to 10,000 years ago, and we all of a sudden started eating the seeds of grasses and the seeds of legumes, beans. And we'd never done that ever before. There's no documentation that a great ape has ever eaten grasses or beans, because they're actually quite lethal. So all of a sudden, we're confronted with totally new lectins that we've never seen before, that our gut buddies have never seen before. And the fascinating thing is, you can actually look at humans 10,000 years ago, and we were actually large creatures. We stood about 6 feet tall, even women. And our brain size was 15% bigger than it is today. If you then go 8,000 years, 2,000 years into agriculture, we had shrunk to 4'10". And our brain size has actually never recovered. We've never gotten our brain back to, quote, normal. Now, if you think about it from a plant standpoint, having you a smaller creature is a pretty doggone good thing, because you'll eat less. But we, unfortunately, haven't grasped that. Now, fast forward again to 500 years ago, and despite what President Trump says, none of us are Americans. We're European, Asian, or African. None of us are from America. And so none of us were exposed to the lectins in American plants until 500 years ago. And like I say in the book, getting to know a new lectin in 500 years is speed dating in evolution. And I don't think it can be done. And some of our most, you know, treasured plants are American plants, like peppers and tomatoes and potatoes and squash family, the American beans, peanuts, and cashews. They're not nuts at all. And we're not designed to eat these things. In fact, just to give your audience an idea about how potent lectins are, the peanut lectin is one of the best ways in an experimental animal, a rhesus monkey, our cousin, to produce coronary artery disease, heart disease. And you can give rhesus monkeys peanut oil, and they will develop massive coronary artery disease. If you do the same experiment and take the peanut lectin out of peanut oil, and you can do it quite easily, and do the same experiment again, they will not get coronary artery disease, proving that it was the peanut lectin that did it. In fact, 94% of human beings have a preformed antibody to the peanut lectin. It is that dangerous to us, and we attack it. So just think about that next time you're out at the ballpark and scarfing down some roasted peanuts.
Wow. And it seems like we have me too. And we must have some kind of magic vortex, and I don't mean that in such a good way. When you take peanut butter and smear it onto a whole wheat bread, I mean, is this like a vortex for inflammation or what?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I wanted to produce heart disease in a human, I'd give them peanut butter and jelly sandwich on whole wheat bread, because the lectins in the whole wheat are actually far more potent than in white bread. And in fact, that's why the French have white baguettes and white croissants, and that's why the Italians have white pasta. I mean, the idea of whole wheat pasta, the Italian would just look at you and go, huh? Why would I do that? And, I've been getting rid of the lectins in whole grains for centuries, and now you want me to put it back? Really? It's like brown rice. Everybody knows how good brown rice is for you. Well, interestingly, 4 billion people use rice as their staple, and yet 4 billion people go to the trouble of taking the hull off of whole brown rice and eating their rice white, because they've been getting rid of the lectins in the hull. And we just sit there and go, gee, I guess 4 billion people are pretty smart. I guess we shouldn't try to get them to eat that healthy brown rice.
Excuse me. I have another question from the audience, slightly jumping sideways, but it's in the gut health world. Boy, our audience has been listening to you a lot. They're saying that you speak about probiotics in spore form in one of your videos.
Yep.
Could you talk about that a bit more?
Yeah. Here's the spoiler alert for probiotics. The vast majority of probiotics, which are friendly bacteria, never make it through the stomach acid to colonize the gut. They're destroyed by stomach acid. And I'm a consultant to several probiotic manufacturers, and we actually kind of chuckle that people actually think that these things are doing something. Now, they do things, but not what people think. But a spore-forming bacteria it resists acid digestion. And that's why in my product, Vital Reds, that I was lucky enough to get the license for what's called BC30, capital B, capital C30, which is right at the moment the only available spore-forming bacteria. It's Bacillus coagulans that will, as it's been proven, to actually colonize the gut. So look for BC30. You can actually find it in any drugstore. Schiff also has the license, and they make a product called Digestive Advantage that I highly recommend. I like my product better, but that's okay. But you can find it in any drugstore.
I've been using your Reds for about 6 months now, and I have so much more energy. It's like I've begun to crave this stuff when I get up in the I'll give you an opportunity to give people an address of where they can get them from you, too. But I have a question from the audience that may open a whole new can of worms. She is looking, I'm trying to make this short because it was very long. She's looking on the internet for foods that have these lectins. And she ran across kidney beans that contain a high level of lectin called photohematoglutinin. I hope I'm not butchering that name. But she says she's read a lot about vaccines, and they put this hematoglutinin in the vaccines to make them adhere more to the cells in the body. And she wants to know if this is a type of lectin that's causing a lot of problems with autism and problems with our kids.
Well, yeah, it opens a can of worms. Just in terms of vaccines, I'm not on the anti-vaccine crowd, with the exception what's happened to us is we've been combining vaccines into single shots, which has never been done when I was being raised, when actually my kids were being raised. They were single vaccines that were given at separate time periods. And what multiple vaccines do is basically carpet bomb your immune system. And I agree with the folks who think that the multiple vaccines, which really are a modern invention, are very suspect in how you want to educate the immune system. And since I consider myself an immunologist, that would be the last thing that I would want to do to my immune system. So maybe we'll let it go at that. Lectins are our communication system. We use lectins for one cell to talk to another, and lectins do this by binding onto cells. So it's true that the kidney bean lectin is a phytoagglutinin, and it's really good at making cells clump together. In fact, five raw kidney beans or five raw black beans, if you eat them, there is evidence that within 5 minutes, people have died by their blood completely coagulating. They're a really good example of plants have armed their babies to the teeth, and they do not want you to eat their kids. You know, all of us, you know, have kids, and we wouldn't want someone to eat our kids, except one of our teenagers. Usually we would be happy for somebody to eat them for a while, but that's another story.
We've all had that moment if we have children. Just kidding.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just kidding, kids.
Just kidding. And I'm shocked to find that we're, you know, we've got about 5 or 6 minutes left. Can we talk about the seven deadly disruptors in sort of a bullet point to at least get them into people's, you know, consciousness?
Yeah. So here's the deal. We have most of the information, most of our genes, most of our immune system lives in our gut, in our bacteria. And those bacteria are so incredibly important to our health that it'll take another book to talk about. But one round of antibiotics is like throwing napalm in the rainforest in your gut. And it can take up to 2 years to rebuild that rainforest. And we're very naive to think that we could swallow some probiotics, which would be like planting baby trees or and think that we're going to have a full rainforest in a couple weeks. And it's just not possible. So we have carpet bombed our gut buddies into oblivion. And when we kill off the good bugs, a bunch of gang members take over. And one of the things that's happened to almost all of us is our guts have been taken over by bad bugs. Number two, the NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. These are like swallowing hand grenades, and I mean that sincerely. It's proven. It's not conjecture. It's been proven, actually, by the drug companies, and I cite a number of their studies. And every time you take an Advil or an Aleve or ibuprofen or naproxen, you are literally denuding the wall of your gut, and lectins and bacteria race right across. Recently, articles have been published in respected journals like the American Heart Association that shows as little as 4 days of taking one of these is enough to dramatically increase your risk of heart attack and stroke. Stay so far away from these guys, you can't see straight, and we're giving people children's Advil, and it's just an abomination. Number three, antacids, proton pump inhibitors, things like Prilosec, OTC, Nexium, Protonix. These stop stomach acid production and allow really bad bacteria to crawl up into your intestines from your colon where they don't belong. But what's really scary is the federal government believes these are so dangerous that there's a black box warning from the FDA saying no human being should take these longer than 2 weeks because of the danger of dementia. And I talk about this in the book, but it turns out that these substances paralyze the mitochondria, the little energy organelles in all of your body, and your brain has the highest concentration of mitochondria. And beautiful studies show that people who use these have a 44% increased risk of dementia compared to people who don't use these things. Ooh.
Yikes.
In fact, David Perlmutter and I just did a podcast a couple weeks ago, and this was one of the subjects. So if you haven't, check out that podcast as well.
That would be a great conversation. I like him and I like you. That would be that's got to be a witty conversation. Wow.
Yeah, we had a good time.
Yeah, I bet.
It's on his website.
And could you say, one of our audience members is asking to say, I think they're asking for David Perlmutter, who's a, you know, brainiac when it comes to diet. And in combination with you, you know, that is, like I say, that's going to be a great ping pong game of, you know, back and forth of like, what about this? No, what about that? What about, so I'm looking, is that on YouTube? Is that on your YouTube channel?
It's actually on, it's on drperlmutter.com channel. I don't think it's up on my channel yet. We'll have it up.
Okay. I will say for people that you have a great, who knew, you have a great cooking channel. I mean, your channel
Thank you.
which is Gundry MD, on YouTube, is just has really like straightforward, you know, like, here, make this. It's good. Eat it. And I we're going to go a couple minutes over because I have to ask about the, you make this great, it made me so hungry. You made a great pad thai using a different kind of noodle, and you also talk about eating the tails. So if you can talk about those noodles briefly, and then why we want to be eating the tails.
Okay, so the noodles are what are called miracle noodles. They're made from a root called the konjac root, also called glucomannan. And they're a traditional noodle that's been used in Asia for centuries. But the beauty of it is it doesn't have any lectins. And you could eat, you know, 5-6 bags of this and lose weight. It turns out that glucomannan is one of the favorite foods of our gut buddies. And the more you eat of this stuff, the happier they get. And the happier they get, the more they take care of you. So one of my favorite brand is Miracle Noodles. And you can get them really in lots of grocery stores. They're in Whole Foods. They're in most health food stores. The nice thing about them is you usually see them in the refrigerator section over by the tofu, but they don't need refrigeration. They come in a bag of water, and the water kind of smells like fish. There's no fish. It's just what it smells like. And just follow the directions on my channel. Now, why should you eat the tails of shrimp? It turns out that shrimp shells have a incredibly potent lectin-binding compound called chitin. And traditional cultures, those tails are on there, not to hold the shrimp, but to eat. And the more shrimp tails you eat, I actually eat the whole thing, the more you bind the lectins in the food that you eat. In fact, chitin is one of the ingredients in my own formula, Lectin Shield, which works.
And where can... Okay, so we're at that point. Boy, we've got a whole other show with you. At least one, if not five. Where can people find some of the things like the Vital Reds and the Lectin product you just mentioned, as well as your book? Where would you like people to go to find all that?
So go to GundryMD.com. You can also get the book on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. We've been on the New York Times bestseller list for the last 5 weeks, so I'm very very happy about that. It's clearly, when you read the reviews on Amazon, it's clearly hit a very, very favorable note. I read all the reviews. I'm just really excited when somebody says, this was the missing link, and here's what happened when I started doing this. So
that's wonderful. And how do people work with you? Do you still see clients?
Right. Yeah, we still do. I actually work 7 days a week. I had a full office yesterday on Saturday in my office in Santa Barbara. I also have offices on Sunday. I'm in Palm Springs today, so I don't have offices today. So I have to take a break every now and then. We cut off. We had a 7-month waiting list to see me, and people were happy to wait, but we decided that was kind of cruel. So at the moment, we're not accepting new patients, except for life-threatening autoimmune problems or cancer problems. I see a lot of people with stage 3 and stage 4 cancer that I don't turn away. But we probably in August, we're going to make the decision to reopen our list. So just if they want to go to drgundry.com, and that's my office website, and they can check things out there.
Wonderful. And are you doing any online webinars yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
Most of what I'm doing is my YouTube channel, and I do a lot of podcasts from Gundry MD. So they'll get a lot of information.
Yeah, I really do. I highly recommend going, and I'll put this in the show notes, about going to YouTube and searching for Gundry MD, because one of the things that I like you to do, besides making that that really great, not bad Thai, pod Thai, that was really delicious, made me drool. And that the other, I think if I remember correctly, that one of the side effects, finally a good side effect, is that those noodles also are good for us. They help. They're they're a prebiotic that actually make the bacteria happier. So that's very exciting. I lost my train of thought because I felt, that was it. That you have short snippets. It's not like everything's an hour lecture. You have like, here's a thought. There's an idea. Do this. Eat that. Try this. You know, it's really, it's a great resource. You can learn a lot just by watching that channel. And great recipes. How can you go wrong? Great recipes.
Thanks.
Food. Food can be good and helpful. That was really stupendous. I knew it was going to be a fun show after your book. And I think we will, you know, talk to you about coming back and talking to you about other categories, because there's so much in here that's, once you begin to figure it out, and as I said, having read the book, it just comes together and you make sense and you think, oh, once you move this direction, then this is the actual lifestyle. There's no more like, try this for a while, or it begins to work.
Right.
It's an amazing concept. That was really wonderful. Thank you so much, Doctor. And Sherry, are you? Do you want to unmute and have a final thought? I bet you do.
There is so much more going on here and so many questions that we didn't get into. I bet we had 10 questions about lectins and weight. My daughter just went off grains and started on your Vital Reds, and she's lost 37 pounds in about 3 months.
There you go.
This stuff works.
That should be the byline.
On Amazon. Yeah.
That's a great result. This stuff works.
That's what's so funny. It does. That's what's so funny. You know, we really never had to advertise what I do. It's all word of mouth. And guess what? It works.
It's amazing.
I don't have to convince anybody. If they try it, it works.
It's there. All right, everybody. Thank you so much.
If somebody says it doesn't work, it's funny. They're doing it
wrong. They're doing it wrong. They're eating peanut butter on the side in the closet and not telling us.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much again, Doctor. And everybody have a great rest of the week. We'll see you on Tuesday. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.